You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Grazia Marcheschi on Relevant Radio 950 AM, Catholic Community of Faith. You are listening to Wayne Messmer with the singing of our national anthem at the Chicago Stadium on January 19, 1991, for the National Hockey League All-Star Game during the Persian Gulf War.
Emotional reaction, strong support for our armed forces in the Persian Gulf who are seeing this telecast live. Our thoughts, our prayers are with you.
You heard a beautiful rendition of the singing of our national anthem with Wayne Messmer with us in studio, who just arrived during the singing of the national anthem. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Grazia Marcheschi, Director of Lay Ministry Formation for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Time is 9:03 on Relevant Radio 950 Catholic Community of Faith. Graz, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to sing along, but I can't sing that high.
And Wayne, you have a beautiful singing voice.
I thank you.
And tell us about that day, January 19th, 1991.
That was an amazing
the
day.
The old Chicago Stadium. And I do know that when NBC Television covered that National Hockey League game that day, normally NBC, when they were covering hockey, would do a cutaway during the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
But the executives in Chicago said, during the singing of the national anthem in Chicago, do not cut away, because the crowd is berserk, patriotic, singing, yelling. Was that the single loudest crowd you had ever heard for the national anthem?
Without a doubt. Because you look at the moment and picture yourself being in that building, first of all, a day and a half after the initial Gulf War had just begun, where they're finally using real bullets. And people knew that their sons and daughters and relatives were now in harm's way. And a lot of the national audience, probably that was their first exposure to what went on over the old madhouse on Madison. And I knew that I was being handed the baton for something very, very significant. And it was a Canadian anthem. And there were Canadians on the front line, too, of course. And you had to sing that with the same pride and conviction. And then finally you get to the Star-Spangled Banner. And I finished, and my wife Kathleen was up in the organ loft with me, and as I finished, I just burst into tears.
Wow.
Because I knew that it is very rare when what we are God-given gifted to do and what we are requested by man to do meet at the same intersection. And that was it for me.
You've had a long-term relationship with the Star-Spangled Banner. How did this all begin?
I kind of talked my way into an invitation back in about 1980 or so. And actually, it was God Bless America that got me involved. And went out and sang for the Chicago Sting soccer team. And
I used to hear you there, too.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah. And Brother Greg was one of my buds, you know, out there. And he would cover the thing. And we really didn't show all my cards, and they didn't know that I was a singer. I was a radio guy, and I said, hey, wouldn't it be great if I'd come out? I'd love to do it. Oh, yeah, you know, so came
so
out there and blew
so
it away.
So it was around 1980 that when you began singing the national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner,
mm-hmm.
during the Blackhawk games. About what year, well, according to Brian Hockey Hitman Brock, our engineer, he thought it was right after around 1980 that at a Blackhawk game they started yelling and singing after Lake Placid when the USA team beat Russia in the Winter Olympics.
That would be the second most common choice. That would be wrong.
Okay. Oh, Brian. when did the sing...
Brian is very young.
Okay, but Brian was even born then. So when did the crowd start going nuts during the singing the national anthem at a Blackhawk game?
It really happened spontaneously in the 1985 conference finals. And the Blackhawks had gone to Edmonton and played Gretzky and had been given kind of a clinic on how the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
And came back to the stadium down 0-2. And a lot of people thought, well, you know, here we go. We lay down and unlace the skates and get out the golf clubs. And for some reason, the crowd that night just went crazy. And they kind of growled like hungry dogs during the Canadian anthem, which was disturbing to me. But then all of a sudden, they just burst into this spontaneous craziness during the anthem. Hawks went on to win Game 3. So obviously, the next game, which I believe was the next night, same thing happened, yeah. And it really caught on from there.
And it's continued ever since.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, going back to the night of the day game with the All-Star game in 91, I know the actual Persian Gulf War began on August 2nd, 1990, but you're right. The bullets and the artillery really began much later,
mm-hmm.
About a week or a couple of days before the All-Star game in 91.
Correct. It was Thursday night, because I remember we were having dinner at a particular restaurant, and I vividly recall the news came on, and you're watching what's happening, and you go, oh, my God, this is real. And that was Thursday night, and then this would have been that weekend.
Now, I'm sure you've been asked this more than one time. I know a Detroit Red Wings fan called in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and the test...
You could stop right there.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing more to be said with a Red Wings fan. And, it takes away his credibility. You know, he called into Chicago and said, how distasteful, unpatriotic, that during the playing of the national anthem, the Chicago crowd is yelling versus standing there at attention and singing the song. What's your take on it?
You know, it's funny because I've been asked that a million times, and having been the guy who was there when it all originated, and, you know, it still happens now at United Center, and even though I'm not the, mm-hmm. I'm no longer the soloist there, I now sing at the for the Chicago Wolves. And I'll tell you, there were times during an exhibition game or the preseason game when people are standing and screaming like maniacs, and you say, this is not right. You know, the All-Star game to me was a kind of an extemporaneous explosion of patriotism, anticipation for the game. You couldn't help yourself. And when it gets into playoffs, when they are real games, I don't mind the clapping and hollering. Screaming because it seems like it's the thing to do, I still don't agree with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the thing is, we're going to take it to a break.
Take us to a break. All right, you're listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio AM 950. We're talking to a Chicago celebrity who's been very important in the lives of a lot of people, Wayne Mesmer, both about his professional work and his faith as a Catholic. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
Thank you. Are you ready to get more involved in the pro-life cause? If so, join us on Saturday, March 27th at St. Lambert Parish in Skokie for Charity in Truth. This annual Respect Life Coordinators Conference will focus on the importance of pro-life issues as we seek social justice for all our brothers and sisters, especially those who can't defend themselves. Cardinal George will reflect on Pope Benedict's latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, or Charity in Truth, viewing it through the lens of the Gospel of Life. Come hear David B. Wright, founder of the National 40 Days for Life movement. Rita Marker, expert on euthanasia and assisted suicide, will share some disturbing end-of-life trends. To register, call the Respect Life office at 312-534-5355. Again, 312-534-5355. All are welcome at St. Lambert in Skokie on Saturday, March 27th. Don't miss the opportunity.
The Catholic Church is urging people in neighborhoods across the United States to participate in the 2010 census. Hello, I'm Bishop Joseph Perry, and I'd like to encourage everyone listening to be counted as part of the census. Your participation is vital. The census helps determine political representation and the level of funding for schools, hospitals, parks, and other services where you live. Hundreds of billions of dollars are at stake. Fill out the census forms when you get them in the mail. Do not be afraid of being counted. By law, names and addresses remain confidential, and only numbers are published. You have nothing to lose, but much to gain when you fill out the census forms. Please participate, and may God bless you.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith. I'm Graziano Marcheschi, Director of Lay Ministry Formation for the Archdiocese, co-hosting with Father Greg Sakowitz, and we're pleased this morning to be talking to Wayne Mesmer, who for many years was the singing voice of the Chicago Blackhawks, now sings with the Chicago Wolves hockey team.
And the Cubs.
And the Cubs.
Field announcer.
I don't know if you remember, you don't remember, but when you were getting ready to do the Damien for the first time at the first Catholic Festival of Faith, I was at a Cubs game, looked up, saw you in the booth, and I wrote Festival of Faith on a sheet of paper.
I do recall.
And, and I'm there waving, you know, I'm like, I'm the guy who called you to get you to do Festival of Faith.
Yeah, and I'm waving, don't bother me.
Yeah, you're like, I'm on the air, what are you doing?
Ushers, remove this man.
Yeah. You know, amazingly, April 12th, which is opening day, this almost baffles me, especially for a kid from the South Side, who, this will be my 26th consecutive opening day.
Wow.
26th.
Yeah, for the Cubs.
God bless you. That's a great tradition. But what we'd like to talk about now is your relationship with Father Damien of Molokai, Saint Father Damien now.
Saint Damien.
Damien.
What a wonderful character.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about how you first got interested in Father Damien, and then I'd like to hear about what he's come to mean in your life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was taught at Five Holy Martyrs Parish on the South Side, you know, it a wonderful, rich Catholic community, and that's, of course, the Franciscan nuns were there, and many people don't realize, when they know the story of Father Damien, they don't realize that Mother Mary Ann, who came with, not with him at first, but he brought her over, and she brought some of the sisters with, and they administered to the women's settlement there at Kalapapa in Molokai. And it turns out that she truly was the person who initiated the concept of dying with dignity. And this goes back to the 1880s. So the hospice program, I really believe, falls solely on her hands.
Wayne, why do we never hear about her?
You will. You will. She is blessed Mother Mary Ann at this point, so she's... she's on the train to sainthood, and you know, I think we're really cheering for her. Extremely dedicated. There's another gentleman who also worked right alongside of Damien, a gentleman named Joseph Dutton, who for 44 years spent time there in the community. And he appeared out of nowhere. But Damien was one of these characters, and I said the reason that introduced me was because the Franciscans would always talk about Mother Marianne, and Father Damien. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be a leper, you know. But I was fascinated by his story and how someone could be so unselfish in their service to other people. And so he's always been with me. And then we finally had the opportunity to uncover the play that was written and actually produced first in 1977. A playwright named Aldith Morris out of University of Hawaii and wrote this play, and it has some great merit. It gave me an opportunity to give a voice to the character that I had always admired so much. And it is odd because when I'm made up, and the exact build, the same height, the beard, the voice, the gruffness that I'm able to bring to the character, it is eerie even to me.
That was Father Damien, in terms of the gruff voice and just the stature that in some ways, your physical stature does resemble Father Damien, who died, I think, in
1889
on April 15th.
The same exact weight, the same exact height. I stood next to a life-size statue. My wife and I were out there last November and really did a pilgrimage to Molokai and to the Kalapapa Peninsula there. And it was amazing. I walked into one of the churches that he had hand-built, and there was no one around. The island of Molokai is rather a story unto itself. And I think there's a bit of guilt that still stays there for what has happened, how these people were basically put on a boat, sent there, and dumped overboard like garbage.
Wayne, give us the story of Molokai.
Molokai is the Board of Health, or actually the Kingdom of Hawaii at the time, the Sandwich Islands then, needed to find a place to isolate these individuals. There was this tremendous influx of leprosy, which not then nor now was ever contagious. But they didn't know, so there was a lot of ignorance about the whole thing. And they thought just take them out of the population so that the foreign visitors would not be offended. So they thought the best way was just to find a place of isolation. So they bought this peninsula of land, which was surrounded on three sides by what is described as vicious surf, and the fourth side by sheer cliffs that come almost straight down. So it's pretty much a prison unto itself, a sour tongue of land, as he describes it in the play. And he says, I never would have known what it was to become, you know, this place of horror, the saddest place on earth. Now, these folks were identified once the diagnosis was confirmed. Then they had 24 hours to report to the Board of Health. Otherwise, they would come to their homes with dogs and or guns. They would parade them down the street in Honolulu, and it was kind of a ceremonial type of thing. They would put them on this boat, the leper boat, would go past Maui and off to Molokai, boom, and just toss them overboard. All in this magnificent setting that that Damien describes that seems to mock us with its beauty.
So they were dropped off on this island and left to die.
They were left to fend for themselves. Sometimes with a dress or a pair of pants and a shirt and no more provisions than that. And they're with some kind of food.
So at any one time, how many people would have been on the island? 500, 1,000, 5,000?
Could have been, over the years, probably as many as 8,000.
At one time?
Have gone there. Never at one time.
That's amazing. We're going to go to a break here on Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 950 AM. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Grazio Marcheschi. Our guest is Wayne Messmer, and the time is 9:19. Stay with us. We'll be back right after a break, and do not touch that dial.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son isn't a number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Come experience what makes the Catholic Church unique, relevant, and compelling for young people today. Hundreds of Catholic teens will gather April 16th through the 18th at Guerin College Prep High School for the Bread of Life Youth Retreat. All teenagers are invited. Experience dynamic music, inspirational talks, personal testimonies, and celebrate Mass with Cardinal George. Here's what past recipients say about the Bread of Life Retreat.
I really like the retreat. They tried to help you out with God's message and guide you in life.
After this retreat, I became more open to God, my parents, and my elders.
The Bread of Life Retreat gives young people permission to be alone with Jesus in the Eucharist and become better friends with our Lord.
To learn more about this unforgettable retreat and to register, call 312-534-8044 or go to breadoflifechicago.org. That's 312-534-8044 or breadoflifechicago.org.
.921 in Chicago on this Friday morning. You're listening to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio. I'm Graziano Marcheschi with Father Greg Sackowitz. We're talking with Wayne Mesmer.
Excuse me. It was so windy yesterday, I saw a robin lay the same egg twice.
How long have you been waiting for that?
Why don't we have a Father Greg joke segment on this show?
I think you just answered that.
Thank you.
Okay, we've had enough of Wayne Mesmer.
Wayne, you mentioned, we're talking about Father Damien, Father Damien the leper, St. Damien of Molokai, who is portrayed by Wayne Mesmer in a powerful one-man play. We'll give you more information about that shortly.
What will it take to get you to say Mesmer?
Mesmer. What did I say before?
That's all right. We're throwing a couple Z's in there. But
Mesmer. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I have to teach people how to say my name.
No kidding.
Yeah, my name, too.
Anyway, you mentioned earlier about Father Damien's gruff voice, and It seems like there were lots of factors in his life that contributed to the gruffness of the character. You know, you talked about the sour tongue of land that he lived on. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of opposition, didn't he?
In order to
help these people that, you know, we might take so for granted, he had to fight.
He fought every single day. And I think that one takeaway that people get from seeing the play Damien, the leper priest of Molokai, as at least as I portray it and have experienced it, is really if I had one guy on my side to fight for me, I wanted to be him. Because he had a constant battle with the bishops, go figure, and don't laugh, and also with
the— Not in this diocese. No fights with bishops here.
Exactly. But there, certainly, there were.
And what were his fights?
The fights were on a number of occasions. There became some, you know, I mean, there was the popularity of the fact that he was getting some notoriety. The attention was being drawn to the atrocities that the Board of Health and or the Kingdom was doing by just discarding these people and their barbarous method of isolation. And he was championing their cause. And so there were gifts and gold francs and books and all these other things that were coming in, and article upon article. But you see, the Kingdom and the Board of Health, They weren't mentioned, so they're thinking this guy is drunk with pride, and so they were always battling. There were other issues, such as differentiating between Catholic and non-Catholic lepers. Mm-hmm. And here he was truly saying that every person is created in God's image, and his one message more than anything else was simply saying that he needed to tell these people that God had not forgotten them. So he would argue with the bishop, one of the new bishops. There were probably three during the time of his tenure there for 16 years. And he would say, if a woman is afraid of having her body, and this is gross reality. If a woman was afraid of having her body devoured by wild pigs when she was put into the shallow grave, you don't ask her if she's a Catholic. You make a coffin for her. You embrace her, and what you do is give her absolution, quite certain that when she dies, God will not ask her either.
So Damien was a 19th century version of Mother Teresa.
Totally.
And the thing is, now our phone number here is 312-255-8408, 312-255-8408 on Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950. Call in maybe with a question for Wayne. Wayne, what drew Damien to Molokai? He could have spent his priesthood in different ways. What drew him to the island?
There were a lot of things, I think, that were truly the divine intervention. His brother, who was also a member of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus, was supposed to go on that mission, and he became ill. Damien, who was being groomed by his father to be a grain merchant and take over the family business back in Belgium, simply went to his dad and said, you can't make this decision. And I know that you run a commercial talking about the vocation and how do you protect that? How do you nurture that and hear God's voice talking to you? And he said, it's God's will, not yours. And there was a bit of a dissension there because he had already given a brother and two sisters to the religious life. So the father was grooming Damien to be the heir apparent to the business. But he went, and off he went to the Sacred Hearts mission, and they agreed to take him on as a novice. He went over to Hawaii before he was ordained, and they made him a priest long before his real time was ready.
Huh.
And the bishop then, one of the bishops that he did get along with, said, if they won't send me priests, I'll have to make my own. So he gave him 10 years up in the Big Island, and he walked around and did all his bit on a couple different parishes. Then he went finally, begged his way to go to Molokai, because he had seen firsthand. He was along with one of the bishops. They were delivering on the leper boat and cattle and all, and he saw what was happening when these hundreds of lepers came to the shore to welcome the new lepers. And he was so moved by this because he said, some are crawling and limping, some even coming in wheelbarrows with their corrupted bodies. And he describes it in pretty graphic detail. But he said, with his amazement, and they are singing. They're singing, welcoming these new people to this place of horror. So he begs the bishop, they need a priest of their own.
You mentioned earlier that leprosy is not contagious. So was it just a tragic irony that he wound up becoming a leper himself?
I think it's part of the journey of sainthood. Hmm. He had no restrictions, really. I mean, if someone came to him and wanted to take a puff on his pipe at night as they sat on in the porch, he couldn't deny him. He would touch their sores with his hands and administer them and hug them and, treat them like, heaven forbid, human beings, And so that was part of the thing.
We're going to go to the phone here. We have John from Chicago. Welcome to Catholic Community Faith and Relevant Radio 950. Good morning, John.
Good morning. And I'd love to see your play, Mr. Mesmer. Mesmer.
Mesmer.
Okay.
I'm sort of catchy now.
Your question or comment, John, for Wayne.
Yeah, I had the chance to go there, and somebody asked me, why would you ever go to that leper colony? Well, it was one of the most inspiring things I've ever done, and to follow that man's life. And it is a beautiful place in Hawaii that people don't normally go to. But what I was wondering is that when Father Damien was alive, he obviously leprosy was still prominent, but it seemed like he died afterwards. But he offered his life, and he did contract leprosy himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, in your opinion, Mr. Mezert, if God took him as a victim soul to eventually get a cure for leprosy.
I don't doubt that for a moment. And in 1937, John, when his body was exhumed, when they brought him back from Molokai and sent him back to Belgium, leaving his hand back there, the interesting thing was the body, as the casket was opened from a rotted casket, his body was intact, which again is part of the whole uncorrupted body of
And this would have been 48 years after his death, because he died in 1889. If this is 1937, that's
mm-hmm.
48 years later that they exhumed the body, and the casket is decayed, but the body is intact.
Mm-hmm.
John, thank you very much for the phone call.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, but
I remember going into that church. It was a wooden church, hand-built by Father Damien, and it was one of the most peaceful experiences I've ever encountered, and I was just wondering what Mr. Mezert thought about it.
I loved it. I walked in, and my wife Kathleen is standing there in the back, and I said, I need a moment, and she knew exactly what I was talking about. I needed to feel the spirit. And, you know, when we go to, whether it's Molokai or Lourdes or to Fatima or somewhere, we want to be struck by lightning, but we aren't often. And I walked up, though, and I put my hands on the altar, and I genuflected. Then I prayed. Then I turned around, and I motioned as if I were fortunate enough to portray Damien himself administering the Holy Eucharist to those people who were at the communion rail.
Wow.
It did something.
John, thank you very much for your call.
I'd love to see your play.
Tomorrow night, we'll talk about it, John.
We'll give information up in Winnetka there.
Keep listening.
John, thank you very much for not only your call, but your wonderful, insightful comment. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Graziano Marcheschi, and our guest is Wayne Messmer. And time is 9:31 on this cold Friday, Chicago morning. 312-255-8408. Stay with us. We'll be back right after a break.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
Ashes on the forehead mark another Lenten season. We'll talk with Cardinal George about what Catholics can do to strengthen their faith during this holy time of year. And the director of the Office for Hispanic Catholics, Father Claudio Diaz, will share his insights on the significance of Lent.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Marches Have a Heart, Help Your Neighbor Month at Catholic Charities. On March 5th from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m., Catholic Charities employees and volunteers will kick off this momentous month of giving by collecting non-perishable food items at NBC Plaza. There's never been a time when your generosity was needed more. This March, consider donating to Catholic Charities. Visit www.catholiccharities.net/neighbor or call 312-655-7525.
Jesus, within the walls of his sepulcher, he arises victorious over human flesh, over mortality, and yes, over sin.
That's Father Claudio Diaz with one of several Lenten reflections you can find in both English and Spanish on the Archdiocese of Chicago's YouTube channels. Go to our website at www.archchicago.org and click on Lenten Resources for reflections that will be posted through Easter. That's www.archchicago.org and look for Lenten Resources.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Time is 9:35 on this cold Friday morning in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with co-host Graziano Marcheschi, Director of Lay Ministry Formation for the Archdiocese of Chicago. And what does this theme song mean? It only means one thing. We have Joyce DeRiga, editor of the Catholic New World, with us on radio. Joyce,
she had her own very special music.
This is Joyce's theme song.
Wow.
This is her theme song. Good morning, Joyce. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. And what is happening in the latest edition of the Catholic New World?
The Catholic Beat.
This is the issue that comes out before Easter. So we've, the last couple of years, we've focused on, we've highlighted converts and their conversion stories in the paper. And I love this. I mean, I love hearing about people's faith journeys and how they get here and that kind of stuff. So our center spread is on that. And then we have Cardinal George did an interview with Catholic News Service about the health care bill, or the health care legislation now, and what that means for us and where we go from here. So that's really important that people check that out. And we have some coverage of the immigration march. As you know, a bunch of 50 buses from, or 50 parishes rather, from the Archdiocese were represented last week in D.C. for a march for immigration reform. So we talked to some people who went and what that means to them. And we have a Year for Priests story and all kinds of stuff about St. Joseph, St. Joseph's tables, explaining what those are. We just celebrated his feast day, and a lot of parishes do the St. Joseph table. So
all this
Joseph
new,
doesn't get
new
enough attention. I'm glad you're doing
wow.
that.
How many conversion stories do you have in part of that center?
We have four RCIA. We've got four features, and then five, six. So we've got six stories.
That is wonderful. And and the Year of the Priest, do you focus on an individual priest or just talk about the Year of the Priest in general?
This topic, we've been doing a little bit of, not really a series, but ongoing stories. This one is about spiritual fatherhood, how priests are also spiritual fathers, and how that sort of parallels to the vocation of marriage. And we've got some priests talking about how they act as spiritual fathers to others. Mm-hmm. It's part of a role of, as you know, of being priest. So.
As I'm sure Greg knows a lot better than I, the spiritual father aspect of priesthood is one that a lot of priests struggle to find time for because there's so many demands on their time. But
yes.
That's clearly what
yes.
they were ordained for. So it's wonderful that you're putting that spotlight on that dimension.
Well, Joyce, want to say thank you very much for giving us the latest material in the newest edition of the Catholic New World. If somebody wants to subscribe, give us a phone number for them to join.
312-534-7577.
That number once again.
312-534-7577, or
and
you can go to CatholicNewWorld.com.
Well, Joyce DeRiga,
and Easter time would be a great time to become a new subscriber to the new Catholic New World.
Outstanding newspaper for the Archdiocese of Chicago, the Catholic New World. And I want to thank Joyce DeRiga, the editor of the Catholic New World, for joining us. Joyce, have a very blessed Holy Week and joy-filled Easter.
You too.
Thank you. And we're going to go right from Joyce DeRiga to Bob Gilligan, who joins us by phone to update on what's going on in Springfield. And Bob Gilligan was in Springfield last night, came back to Chicago. And specifically, Bob, we're going to talk about the Meeks bill that would provide vouchers for kids attending private schools. Bob, welcome to Catholic Community of Faith.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And I know you have your own program, Bob. And tell us about your program, which airs what?
Third Monday of the month.
Third Monday of the month.
9 o'clock a.m. Every month.
Legislatively, you're living in very interesting times, aren't you, Bob?
That's the understatement of the show.
So tell us about the what's happening with the Meeks bill.
Well, it's pretty exciting. I had never bet on this happening. Yesterday, the Senate passed by 33 votes. You need 31 to pass, so we squeaked by with two-vote margin. A bill that would provide vouchers to students who are currently in failing schools in a certain district in the city of Chicago, District 299. It'd pay the full cost of tuition. It's not the ideal voucher bill. It's a pilot in a certain geographic area, but it's a start. And given the political climate that we're in, I am happy to report that I think it's interesting for the first time in a long time. I think legislators are finally waking up that we got to try something different. As Kimberly Lightford said yesterday on the Senate floor, who's a Democratic senator from Maywood, you know, little Johnny still can't read. We've tried mm-hmm. charters. We've tried all these different things. Let's try something else. Let's see if the parents, if we give them an opportunity to send their child to a non-public school, probably it'd be a Catholic school because we have some capacity. Maybe we can finally figure this thing out a little bit.
Real quickly,
we're pretty excited about it.
Can that bill survive legal challenges?
Yes, it's constitutional. Anybody who says it's not is wrong. We're pretty confident. Although it probably would be challenged in court, but we're pretty confident it'll survive constitutional challenges.
And Bob, before we go to a break, just tell us about the latest version of the Freedom of Choice Act.
We're in good shape, we think. Today we'll find out that we hope that the sponsor doesn't call it the bill. We've been working hard, many parishioners know, to get the word out to oppose it. It could get called for a vote, but we don't think it will because we don't think it has the votes to pass. But we're not 100% certain of that. We won't know until probably the end of today.
Hey, you're working hard for us and for the Catholic agenda. God bless you. We thank you for being with us. We're going to go to another break and then return and continue our conversation with Wayne Messmer. Don't go away.
Thank you, Bob. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is written by our publisher, Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities throughout Cook and Lake Counties.
In our next few issues of the Catholic New World, as well as on our website, gather tips to enhance your Lenten journey.
Visit our website at www.catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777.
Your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
The Catholic Church is urging people in neighborhoods across the United States to participate in the 2010 census. Hello, I'm Cardinal Francis George, Archbishop of Chicago, and I'd like to encourage everyone listening to be counted as part of the census. Your participation is vital. The census helps determine political representation and the level of funding for schools, hospitals, parks, and other services where you live. Hundreds of billions of dollars are at stake. Please fill out the census forms when you get them in the mail. Do not be afraid of being counted. By law, names and addresses remain confidential and only numbers are published. You have nothing to lose, but much to gain when you and others fill out the census forms. Please participate, and may God bless you.
And welcome back to Catholic Community of Faith on Relevant Radio, 9:50 a.m. Time is exactly 9:44 on this cold, brisk Friday spring morning in Chicago. I'm Father Greg Sackwitz, along with Graziano Marcheschi, the Director of Lay Ministry Formation with the Archdiocese of Chicago. And with us in studio, we're very honored and privileged to have with us Wayne Messmer, the voice of the Chicago Cubs, field announcer. Wayne, I have to admit, I love the White Sox, but I never cheer against the Cubs. I always cheer for them unless they're playing the White Sox. And but you got a great voice and also known for the national anthem, the singing of the Star Spangled Banner.
But we have a divided house here. I grew up in Wrigleyville, so.
And I grew up in Park Ridge, but always been a White Sox fan.
And I grew up on the south side.
So it's two to one, Greg. Be careful.
2-1. Now, Wayne, a story that is part of your journey. Tell us what happened on an April evening, 1994.
After singing a Blackhawks game, which I had done every game for 13 seasons, walking back to my parked car, stopped at a place on Taylor Street, parked a block and a half away, and walking back to my parked car, as I getting to the car, I notice a young man walking down the street, and I keep my eye on him, and thought nothing of it because he stopped in his tracks, and I got in the car, shut the door, started the car, backed up, started to pull out of the parking spot, and suddenly I heard, pow, pow, pow. I go, whoa, time to get out of here. Turns out the third sound followed the first two of someone who I had not seen, ran up behind me, banged on the window twice in the driver's side door, and then just, boom, pulled the trigger. 9mm, shot point blank. Right through the glass and then hit me right in the neck, and the bullet went through my neck and lodged in the muscle on the right side. I often say no previous experience needed to tell you that you've been shot. I hit the gas, took off, never saw where the shot came from, never saw the young man who had snuck up on me, and then drove the block and a half back to where I had just come from, parked the car, got out of the car, walked back to where I had just come from, knocked on the door. And it was fairly obvious at that point that things were not good. I didn't know how bad I was hurt, and which was probably to my benefit. And sat there, waited for the police, the ambulance to arrive. And boy, you talk about life flashing before your eyes. And everything that I had done, I mean, I spent 18 years on the radio. I was a singer, and I mean, was, and thank God I still am. But at that point, everything was in jeopardy. And I didn't know, well, whether I was going to bleed out or make it to the hospital or anything. And I certainly didn't know at that point the gift of my voice. It was stolen. It was gone. And so off we went to Cook County Hospital, a tremendous life-saving place. And fortunately, by the great grace of God, I was treated by the right doctor who knew what to do and not to just go in and do a hack job. And they did everything they could. I was wearing a tie at the time, and amazingly, the tie actually went into the bullet hole. Wow. And stopped a lot of the bleeding. The bullet did not exit, otherwise I would have bled out right in the car. And I was...
That's remarkable that the bullet didn't exit.
Yeah, and I wish I could say my superhuman strength or something prevented it, but, you know, if it's not your time, it is not your
time.
Now,
Wayne, I'd heard the story that the young man who shot you, actually you were talking to and was asking for your money and out of nowhere shot you.
But that is untrue.
That is untrue.
That's in Wikipedia. You need to get that fixed.
Well, there's a...
They tell a completely different story.
I will tell you the actual account, word for word, in its absolute truth, is captured in the book, The Voice of Victory, that I wrote. And it takes you through the entire journey, which includes what I believe to be the three elements that really, fortunately, were in place for me at that time. Faith, family, friends, in that order. So the three-legged stool that provided me strength to be able to get through this thing ultimately led to the fourth F of forgiveness, which took a long while to come to. But that one led to, I think, the fifth and one of the most powerful of the F words is freedom. Mm-hmm. And the one young man who was involved, I drove a couple hours, 3.5 hours to be specific, went down and visited with him face-to-face in prison.
Was he a 15-year-old young man?
No, how was he apprehended?
Well, they were caught relatively soon after the event.
How old was he?
They were 15 and 16, the two individuals that were involved.
Wow.
Now, yeah. Since you were no longer at the scene, how did they find out who had done this?
Police work, you know, just a matter of asking Chicago the right people the right questions.
Remarkable.
Yeah. They got on it pretty quickly.
And talk to us about that element of forgiveness and freedom.
Well, the forgiveness thing was something that I think that we're all victimized in different times in our lives in one form or another. We're lied to, cheated on, downsized, or embezzled or something, or God forbid, we're shot. And some people, fortunately, don't have to go through the dramatic impact of that. But it is only the victim that can forgive. And I said, I cannot be re-victimized every single day. And for some reason, I just kept thinking, I need to face this. I need to find out what happened. I need to find out, to speak with this young man and say, what were you thinking? What were, do you realize what this did to my life? Do you see now, sitting in jail with that unfortunate decision, did to your life?
So what was that encounter like?
It was powerful, to say the least, because we sat and I waited for him to come down for about an hour or so. And a prison, if you've never been to a prison, it's something you never forget. It is where hatred, bigotry, racism, unfairness, everything that is the foul element of our society festers. And I thought as I was going there, and I really had to do some soul searching, am I going there to complete a last chapter of my book, or am I going there for what is truly in my heart, to bring the message, much like Damien, that God has not forgotten you? And I thought, if someone outside of those walls, the so-called spatial enclave, had a reason to hate this young man, it would be me. My message was that I didn't. And it was as powerful to me as it was to him.
How did he receive it?
Well, he was moved by the fact that I would actually come to see him.
You came to see him how much after the evening you were shot?
5 years.
5 years, and he was still mm-hmm. in jail?
Oh, yeah.
For really for attempted murder?
Yeah, it was attempted murder, attempted aggravated battery, and... You know, three.
So you saw him
counts.
5 years later, and you walk in, you meet him. Did he have much to say?
He had a lot to say. And then the most impactful words were, as he came in, I just took his hand. And I was, as I'm waiting for him, I was thinking, do you know who I am? Is what I was going to ask him. And he looked at me, and he repeated probably 5-6 times, I can't believe you've come to see me. So I took his hand and I said, I'm here to see how you're doing.
He knew who you were.
He vividly knew who I was, yeah. Because there hadn't been a lot of visitors for him.
Mm-hmm.
And as I sat down with him.
He was a 15-year-old teenage boy.
Yeah.
Well, he was 20 by then.
Yeah, he was the 16-year-old at the time. Yeah,
so 16-year-old kid on the west side, late at night, shoots you, and now he's 21 years old,
mm-hmm.
and you come to visit him.
Mm-hmm. I felt the calling. I don't know what it was. And then my wife, who is a tremendously compassionate person, I mean, she's just an incredible person for my life. I'll never forget the sentencing, because we're sitting there and we're watching this young man be led away in the orange jumpsuit, and then people at the on the steps of the courtroom, isn't that great? Hey, high five and all. No, there's no high five here.
Yeah.
I just watched somebody else's life destroyed. And if that's what you think, then you know you're offending me by saying that. And
what was the sentence? How many years did he get?
Well, he was sentenced to 8, 12, and 21 concurrently. Interestingly enough, he was not the individual that pulled the trigger.
Hmm. He was not.
No, the 15-year-old pulled the trigger, and we could go into a program unto itself of the difference between the legal system and the justice system, but...
Now, the young man who pulled the trigger...
I also spoke with.
Mm-hmm. You did?
At juvenile court, right.
That is amazing.
So he was dealt with differently because of the age?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The 16-year-old treated as an adult, and the 15-year-old as a juvenile.
Correct.
And the 15 is a 16-year-old and is still in jail today.
No, he unfortunately, he spent his time, and I don't want to get too detailed because there's a pending situation that this same young man is involved in now. He was released and then got himself into a little bit of a scuffle here recently. And I don't want to pat myself on the back, but he was treated rather harshly, in my opinion, on the sentencing of this current situation. And well, I'm going to speak on his behalf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you this, Wayne. When you were shot and your whole career is with your voice, singing, broadcasting, you're shot in the throat, the vocal cords, you, I'm sure, spend time in the early days of the hospital wondering, will I ever talk or sing again?
No doubt.
How are those moments in your life?
Very, 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 very painful.
What were some of the feelings you were going through?
A lot of anger. I wanted to strike out at something, and I couldn't even make a sound. I mean, I had a tracheotomy tube. They basically gashed me ear to ear. But you have to maintain a sense of humor. I'm thinking, I'm alive. I will do something with what I have left. What I've been already given the opportunity to do, that national anthem at the NHL All-Star Game, all of those years with 3 years with the White Sox, all those years with the Cubs, the Sting, the Bulls, I mean, singing Bears, all these fun things. I got an opportunity to do, at that point, hundreds of times what people would love to do once in their life.
And you were a household name in those days and today, Wayne Messmer, with the singing the national anthem. I mean, you are literally a household name in Chicago today.
Well, you hang around long enough, people know you.
And overnight, at that time, it came to an abrupt halt, mm-hmm. where you were literally glad to be alive.
And satisfied with it. Satisfied.
Wow. Now,
6 months later, you were singing the national anthem again.
I'll tell you, that's where the miracle comes in. Because they told me a year and a half, maybe 2 years, I'll know what my speaking voice would sound like, and not a single doctor would stand up and look me in the eye and say, you will sing again.
And in October of 94, you sang the national anthem for the first time after the shooting, where?
At the, then it was the Rosemont Horizon, now the Allstate Arena, at the first ever Chicago Wolves home game.
And I'm sure you brought the house down that night.
It was insanity. It was, as I refer to it, my Elvis moment.
People remember cheering for you. Because the day you were shot, it was headlines in every newspaper, mm-hmm. the lead on every radio news program, Wayne Messmer shot and mm-hmm. intensive care at the hospital. In the last few minutes, two things, Wayne. Give us where people can purchase the book, The Voice of Victory by Wayne Messmer. Where can they get a copy?
I would say, let me give you just a simple email, which is wmtalks@gmail.com.
wmtalks@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And if people are interested in the book, we certainly will respond and tell them how they can get it. And also true about the Damien play.
Tell us about the play tomorrow night.
We're doing it at the Winnetka Chapel, which is in the corner of Lincoln and Pine in Winnetka. And again, anyone who is listening today, everyone for that matter, send an email, wmtalks@gmail.com. We will put your name down, and I will I will make sure that at the door you'll get a discount. Tickets are generally $20. Listeners of today will knock $5 off the ticket price.
What time is the performance tomorrow?
Performance is at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. And what about a phone number if they wanted to call for tickets? Or pretty much just go to the email?
Go to the email, because now at this point we're already...
Okay, we need to bring today's program to a close. Want to thank in a very special way our guest, Wayne Messmer. Your life has truly been a gift from God. You are a gift to all of us with your beautiful voice. You're a man of deep faiths. Wayne, thank you. Special thank you to co-host Razzo Markeski. Thank you to our excellent producer, Jim Dish, wonderful, outstanding engineer, Brian Hitman Brock, and to all our listeners,
the first in the series of his Childhood Heroes programs.
With Wayne Messmer and Jim and Brian, thank you. I'm Father Greg Sackowitz. To all our listeners, God bless. Prayerful, wonderful weekend.
Faith has brought us high. A stirring rendition, emotional reaction, strong support for our armed forces in the Persian Gulf who are seeing this telecast live. Our thoughts, our prayers are with you.